This is Digital Story Podcast number 865, October 18th, 2022. Today's theme is, why would you put a cheap lens on an expensive camera? I'm Derek Story. Over the last few months, we've seen incredible lens bargains from independent manufacturers. Opticals that would normally cost 2 to 3 times more are available in a variety of focal lengths and mounts. Generally speaking, we know their quality doesn't match the performance of name brand offerings. So is there any situation when a cheap lens would be a viable option? I weigh in on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So one of my favorite rabbit holes to fall into are the comments sections of photography articles where armchair experts lambast other commentators and the post itself. And one topic that's sure to bring the heat is when a new bargain lens is announced. It's so funny because right away you can just feel it coming, right? Right away you go, all right, they're going to start lining up. Now, I have a couple examples for you of this, and then I'm going to get into situations where maybe a bargain lens has some merit, but we'll get to that in a minute. First, let's see how the armchair quarterbacks rate this game. The latest dust-up centered around a post titled, Astra Hori announces a $289 40mm f5.6 manual lens for Fujifilm GFX cameras. And this is on DP Review. Of course, I have the link in the show notes. So I'll read you what DP Review says, and then we'll talk a little bit about the comments. The fully manual lens offers a 32mm equivalent focal length and is constructed of 7 elements in 5 groups. It uses a 5-blade aperture diaphragm, has a minimum focusing distance of 41 centimeters, which is about 16 inches, uses a 62mm front filter thread, and uses physical rings for both aperture and focus. Now, I have a GFX 100S with a couple of lenses, and this is me now talking, not the article, and I could really use a moderate wide, but it's not a camera that I use all the time. Sometimes, it'd be kind of nice to have something around 32 millimeters when I'm walking around, especially doing a little wider street photography or a little landscape photography. So I was interested in this announcement. I mean, it caught my eye. I opened it up and I read about $289. Anyone who has purchased a medium format lens knows that $289 will probably get you a lens hood and a filter, and that's about it, right? So after I read a little bit about the lens itself, I went to the comments, knowing that this will probably be great fun, as it was. So when I checked in, there were about 96 comments. Now, most of them would not consider buying this optic. A few were curious, but most of them were totally against it. They just says it doesn't make sense to have a medium format camera that you spend multiple thousands of dollars on and then put a $289 lens on that camera. In other words, the logic being, if you pay a lot for the camera, then you need to pay a lot for the lenses that go on it. That was basically it. Otherwise, why buy the expensive camera? Why have a medium format sensor if you're just going to put a Coke bottle in front of it, right? Okay. So that was their thinking. All right, let's go to another one. So then I watched a video review of the TT Artisan 50mm f1.4 tilt lens. And this was by Christopher Frost. I don't know if you've ever seen any of his lens reviews, but they're quite good and they're detailed. And one of the nice things that he does, and he did in this one, is that he actually shoots, you know, pictures of targets and things so that you can actually see what the lens sharpness is at f1.4, at f2, f2.8, both in the center and on the edges. So, you know, very helpful when you're trying to evaluate the quality of a lens. But this lens kind of took a different turn because it was a tilt lens, which is something that, you know, they're hard to come by, first of all. There's not many tilt lenses out there. And a tilt lens allows you, very much like a 4x5 Bellows camera, allows you to either correct, right? Like if you have a building, you know, and it's tilting, you can use a tilt lens to straighten it out. Or you can also like enhance depth of field if you tilt it one way, or really decrease depth of field, sort of like a lens baby, if you tilt it another way. They're really super handy lenses. So being able to score one of these for $200 is an interesting proposition. So what Frost showed us is that the lens isn't very sharp wide open at f1.4. Well, for anyone who knows about f1.4 lenses, especially ones that are, you know, affordable, that probably isn't a shocker. And it wasn't very sharp both in the center and on the edge. But what happened was it kind of cleaned up nicely as he stopped down a stop or two. He didn't have to go that far. By f2.8, things were already looking really good in the center, and the edge was looking pretty decent. Go another f-stop, f4, and it got even better, right? So there were 47 comments for this particular video, and many of them were willing to give this lens a try, primarily because of its unique abilities, and that it still could perform well if you stop down a bit, right? In other words, they go, okay, I get it. It's not great at f1.4 if you're thinking of sharpness. But if I stop down to f2.8 or f4, I still have a tilt lens that, you know, can do all sorts of cool things. So I would say that the comments were far more favorable for this particular lens than they were for the other lens that went on a medium format camera. So this leads me to some possible answers to my question, which is, why would you put a cheap lens on an expensive camera? Well, let's explore some possible reasons why. First of all, maybe the lens has some unique capabilities. The tilt lens by TT Artisan being a great example. So if a lens can do something that, you know, serves you well, and if you can work around its deficiencies in order to achieve what you want, then, okay, maybe in that case, it's worth a try. So the first one, the lens has unique capabilities. Possible reason on why you would put a cheap lens on an expensive camera. Second reason, sharpness isn't the number one priority. Who says that every picture we take has to be absolutely sharp? I remember the first time I did a portrait with a Zeiss lens of an elderly woman, and I stopped down a bit, like f5.6 or so, and it was way too sharp. It was too sharp. It wasn't flattering. And in real life, she looked much better than my picture of her, and I was really disappointed in myself. Sharpness isn't always the number one priority. Now, we all know the assignments where we need a super sharp image, but also there are assignments where maybe we don't, portraits being one of them, mood scenes being another. Sharpness doesn't always have to be at the top of the list. I don't know why. Why are we so obsessed with pinpoint sharpness? I don't understand. And it has been this way since I've been reading popular photography as a teenager. I mean, honestly, the sharpness thing has always been an obsession with photographers, all right? But it isn't always the number one priority. So that's another possible reason why you might put a cheap lens on an expensive camera. Third possible reason, you want to create a unique look. You want to create something that looks different. Now, thanks to our smartphones, right, and with their small sensors and their expansive depth of field and their computational photography and all that sort of stuff, a lot of our pictures begin to look the same. We all know this. We've talked about this before, right? And sometimes you want that. Like, for instance, I was just traveling in Washington, D.C. I'll talk a little bit about that later. I was just traveling in Washington, D.C., and I was out seeing the sights. I love that city. I love spending time there. It's about my fifth or sixth time there. Well, a smartphone is great for Washington, D.C. because, you know, you want the World War II memorial in the foreground with the fountains and everything to be sharp, but you still want to see the Lincoln Memorial in the background and all this kind of stuff, right? It's great. So there are times when that type of capture is just really perfect. But there are other times when you want to create something that's different than what everyone else is capturing with their smartphone. And in that case, having a unique lens, dare I say a cheap lens, can really help you achieve that goal. And I'm going to give you an example of that here in just a minute. So that's number three, creating a unique look. Number four, the most obvious reason, it's affordable. It's cheap, right? It's a cheap lens. We can get it. We can experiment with it. We can take pictures. We can have a new lens. And it doesn't cost us a bunch of money. You know, it's one thing when you spend $1,200 for a lens, you better like it, right? You better like it because there's going to be, if you're like most of us, there's going to be a little buyer's remorse when you first put that money down. So when you get that lens, right, it better deliver the goods. A cheap lens, your expectations are low. The bar, you can trip over the bar, it's so low, right? If it delivers anything that you want, you figure for the money, I'm ahead of the game. Cheap is a low pressure proposition, right? So this is a valid reason. It doesn't cost a lot of money, number four. And then number five is that it fills a seldomly used gap in your lens library. And I think going back to the tilt lens, that's a good example. You don't want to spend $2,000 on a tilt shift lens if you don't need one that often. But let's say every now and then you do some architectural photography or you do something where you really want to play with the depth of field in a unique way, not just stopping down and opening up. Well, then it's kind of nice. And you know that if you stop down this f1.4 tilt lens to f4 or 5.6, you can get something that is highly acceptable. And yet all the buildings are straight and everything looks the way it's supposed to. Not something you do that often. But when you do it, isn't it great to have access to that lens? So that's the fifth reason why you may want to put a cheap lens on an expensive camera. So one, the lens has unique capabilities. Two, sharpness isn't the number one priority. Three, creating a unique look. Number four, it's affordable. And number five, it fills a seldomly used gap in your lens library. Now, I want to tell you a story. So I had this client a while back. And they were a great client. I got a lot of work from them, commercial client. And they went through this branding exercise, and they really wanted to change the look of their photography. They had a specific feel that they wanted. They wanted strong backlighting in the shots. They wanted to have kind of the softness around the main subject. However, they wanted the main subject to have good sharpness. They wanted me to use unique angles, like, you know, shooting just a little behind the subject and things like that. And as often as possible, they wanted a little bit of flare in the shot. They like that flare that you get sometimes when you shoot into a very strong light source. So they said, you know, and they showed me the examples. They said, this is what we want. And they wanted that look in all the shots that we did. So I had multiple assignments with them that spanned many months. And that was the look that they wanted. So I said, okay, I like it. This is fun. This is going to be a nice challenge. I went out and I bought, and I don't know how to say it, Yongnuo lens, Yongnuo, Yuganu? I don't know. I don't know how to say it, but you know it. You know this is one of the first cheap lenses that was available, and they made knockoffs for all sorts of things. Well, I got one for my Canon 5D Mark II. I got one of these lenses, and I generally shot with it wide open, pointed it right at the strong light sources, composed the shots the way that they wanted me to, and they turned out exactly the way the clients liked. And it was so easy. It was so easy with that lens, where it would have been very difficult with, let's say, the 50 millimeter Canon lens that I had. Okay, that lens made those assignments very simple. And you know, it's funny, over time, I mean, not like days and weeks and months, but you know, over a shoot or two, I really started to get my rhythm with this lens, and I started to like the shots a lot. I thought they were kind of cool. I thought they were appealing, and it definitely separated the look. This is, you know, this was a financial institution I was shooting for, and they were tired of the same old boring shots, you know, where the person's shaking the other person's hand or handing them the keys of the house or whatever it happened to be. They were tired of those, and they wanted something different. And using this lens allowed me to help them complete their vision. And I actually liked the shot. I thought the shots were quite artistic. Spent $100 on that lens. Served me well for the longest time. And then I think I sold it for $100, you know, after those shoots were over and I wasn't using the 5D anymore and all that. So I just sold it, and, you know, it was a happy ending to a happy story. Speaking of story, so what is the moral of this story that I'm telling you? If you put yourself in a box that has to have the pictures you produce to be perfectly sharp, straight, and classically composed, I fear that you may be missing opportunities to create something truly compelling. Yes, there are situations where we need our best lenses and we need maximum sharpness and all that stuff. We all know what those situations are. Chances are very good we all have lenses that can meet those needs. But not every subject demands that. And sometimes a cheap lens on an expensive camera is just what the artist ordered. FBI arrests gallery owner for forging Ansel Adams' photos. This is a crazy story, and I found it on petapixel.com, and the link is in the show notes. Let me read you what they had to say here. The FBI raided the home of gallery owner who is accused of cheating clients out of more than 100 rare fine art photographs, including prints by famed landscape photographer Ansel Adams, worth an estimated $1.6 million. Wendy Halstead Beard, who owned the Wendy Halstead Gallery in Michigan, was arrested on Friday and charged with mail and wire fraud and accused of orchestrating a scheme involving photographs that she received on consignment. Prosecutors allege that she sold pictures without the owner's knowledge, pocketed the cash, or failed to return unsold works. According to an affidavit, the 82-year-old victim gave Beard $900,000 worth of fine art photography in 2018 for her to sell on consignment. Included in the collection was a mural-sized photograph of the Tetons and Snake River by Adams. Beard agreed to sell the photographs for $685,000 with a 5% commission. Investigators say she sold it for $440,000, but the victim was never notified she had sold it and never received the money. A second victim, an 89-year-old collector suffering from Alzheimer's disease, consigned photos including prints by Adams as well as photographs by Arnold Newman and Jerry Ulsma. The collection included a signed print by Adams in Yosemite National Park in California in 1948 and valued at $4,000 to $5,500. Investigators say that when the client's relative asked for the Adams photos to be returned to them, Beard gave them cheap copies from a gift shop instead of the original signed photographs. Oh my word. On Friday, FBI agents raided Beard's home and arrested her. She was released on $10,000 unsecured bond Friday after making an initial appearance in federal court in Detroit on charges punishable by up to 20 years in federal prison. So she sold the prints, pocketed the money, doesn't tell the clients that she sold the prints. Then when the relatives of the client asked for the prints back because they said, hey, you haven't sold anything or you certainly haven't sent us any money, she goes to a gift shop, buys prints of the very same images, and tries to pawn those off as the original works of art. That, my friend, is classic. That is classic. And you know what? I hope she is found guilty and serves a nice long sentence, because there is no room in our craft for that type of criminal behavior. The new Nimble Photography Weekly Newsletter. As you've already heard, I'm having so much fun with this. It varies from week to week. You never really know what you're going to get. But you know that every Thursday, you're going to get something cool and photography related. I'm going to give you kind of a heads up on what's going to happen this week, Thursday. So I spent a week in Washington, D.C. Yeah, I love that city. I have to tell you, I have been there many times for work. And this is the first time that I really, you know, got to go without having to go to a bunch of meetings and stuff. That I just got to go and be a tourist, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I did all sorts of stuff. I really did. I did the stuff that you would expect. Spent time in the museums, you know, which are just fantastic. Went to some new museums I hadn't been to before. I actually was able to tour both the Capitol and the White House. Had never done that before. So that was really cool. I got to explore some of the old bars in town where you go in there and you go right away, wow, this is so cool. I'm going back in time. And then the bartender tells you, yeah, James Madison sat on that stool, you know, that kind of stuff. And of course, they have all the great whiskeys. Just sit in there and just sort of marvel at where you are. Clearly, it makes the whiskey taste better. So all that kind of stuff. So I have some pictures from that. You might imagine that I took a few shots. So I have some pictures from that trip that I'm going to share in this Thursday's newsletter. So for those of you listening to the podcast, now you kind of know what's coming down the pike on Thursday. Now, if you haven't signed up for the newsletter yet, that shouldn't be a problem because it's easy to do. There's a sign-up box right here in the show notes, and it's free. It's free. So all you have to do is just sign up, and then it will show up in your inbox every Thursday, and there's going to be a wide variety of stuff. And there's going to be business, too, like when we get into the next round of workshops and stuff like that, any new offerings we have. So if you just want to keep up with what's going on with our community, if you want to read some, what I think is some pretty good writing about the world of photography, and if you want to see some fun pictures, this newsletter is going to be just the ticket. And those of you who have signed up, thank you. I really appreciate it. The 2X lens on the iPhone 14 Pro is surprisingly good. And this is an article I found on The Verge, theverge.com, link in the show notes. But I thought this was interesting. I'm going to read you a few paragraphs and then I'll talk a little bit about it. One of the iPhone 14's Pro's big new features is a big new camera sensor. For the first time, an iPhone has a high-resolution main camera sensor, 48 megapixels to be exact. And the best thing about it isn't that you can take 48 megapixel photos. You can, sure, but RIP your phone's storage space. Nope. One of this sensor's best features is the 12 megapixels in the middle. Apple has added a 2x zoom mode to its camera app, and all it does is use the center portion of the main camera sensor to crop in and mimic the effect of a 48 millimeter equivalent telephoto lens. That's it. Simple. But it's actually kind of a big deal. I wasn't expecting to like the 2X Zoom. For starters, it feels dangerously close to a digital zoom. That's when you zoom in on a portion of the image without the benefit of the extra pixels or optics. Your phone essentially magnifies a portion of the full image, which reduces resolution. In order to get the image back up to original resolution, it had to make some guesses about information that's missing, and things get watercolory very fast. Digital zoom has gotten better recently by using computational tricks to fill in the gaps, but even so, I'd rather stick with good old-fashioned optics. In any case, that's not what Apple's doing here. This crop to 2x uses all 12 megapixels at the center of the sensor, so you're getting a full resolution image just without the pixel binding tricks that are available when the full width of the 48 megapixel sensor is used. It doesn't need to fill in any missing information because it's all just there. For subjects in close quarters, especially portraits, I like the 48 millimeter better than the 1x, which is 24 millimeter, or the 77 millimeter equivalent 3x lens. Apple's camera engineers must have figured that it might be the case because they made it the new default focal length when you turn on portrait mode. And I think that was a very smart move. It's a common belief among photographers that a 50 millimeter lens has a field of view that's similar to the human eye. So this has that going for it too. Essentially what they've done is they've added yet another lens to the camera, right? So, you know, you have the ultra wide, which is wonderful, which I just used a lot in Washington, D.C. I love it. And then you have the wide, which is 24 millimeters. You have the 77 millimeter telephoto, right, which is really cool. And now in between all that, you have an optical 48 millimeter. So you have four high quality focal lengths right there in your camera. It's not a digital zoom where the camera is making up pixels. All the pixels are there, and it's just tapping the center portion of this new sensor. Pretty cool. If you have an iPhone 14 or if you have one on the way, this is something that you can play with and enjoy, knowing that it's not a digital zoom the way you think it is. It is basically an optical lens doing optical things with real pixels, and that's pretty fun. All right, let's take care of a little Virtual Camera Club news. I want to start out by thanking our Inner Circle members. These are the people that support our podcast and our community week in and week out. Thank you, Inner Circle members. Some goodies are going to be coming your way. I'm working on the new slate of workshops. You're going to get notice ahead of time. You're going to be able to reserve ahead of time. And not only that, you're going to get a discount for anything you want to attend. Just one way that I say thank you for being an Inner Circle member. I so appreciate your feedback and your support. And everyone listening to this podcast should appreciate you as well, because you know what? You keep those terrible ad spots off our show. Thank you, Inner Circle members. I want to mention that I have affiliate tiles on all the pages of the Digital Story. They're in a second column for both Amazon and B&H Photo. If you're going to make a purchase, if you're going to purchase one of those cool cheap lenses, I think it's on Amazon, the one that I was talking about, one for the Fujifilm GFX, then if you would click on the tile first and then navigate to what you want to see, that helps support this podcast. Affiliate links, they don't cost you anything, but they help your community a lot. A big thanks to everyone who has been taking that one extra step to help us out. I so appreciate it. And finally, a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. They are the folks that help us achieve our printing goals, whether it be for special projects like scrapbooks, fine art greeting cards, whether we decide that we want to print that panorama photo that we so love, that we took with our iPhone, that turned out so well. Do you know that you can get panorama proportioned paper? Do you know that you can make a panorama fine art greeting card with an envelope? I mean, this stuff is cool. This is the kind of thing that you can find on Red River Paper that you probably didn't even know existed and wouldn't know how to find it if you did. They have it, and they allow you to create unique gifts. One of my favorite things is the square fine art greeting card, perfectly square with a square envelope. They just look cool. They just look cool. They look fabulous. You can discover all of this by clicking on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story. Go over to our landing page, take a look around, find something fun and cool and unique, order it, have it ready to go. Holidays are right around the corner. You want to be ready to create some holiday gifts. A big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. And be sure to check out their Facebook page as well at facebook.com/Red River Paper. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm working on some very cool stuff for the next 2 weeks. Boy, some stuff is coming down the pike. You got to make sure you tune in. Until then, have a great week. Take some pictures. Do something creative. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.